reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Jesus took Peter, James, and John his brother, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as light. And behold, Moses and Elijah appeared to them, conversing with him. Then Peter said to Jesus in reply, Lord, it is good that we are here. If you wish, I will make three tents here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. While he was still speaking, behold, a bright cloud cast a shadow over them. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. When the disciples heard this, they fell prostrate and were very much afraid. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, Rise and do not be afraid. And when the disciples raised their eyes, they saw no one else but Jesus alone. As they were coming down from the mountain, Jesus charged them, Do not tell the vision to anyone until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. Trying to think of my own spiritual journey, I would say that I've kind of gone through phases. But there was a certain point where I went from, this is just like what we do, you know, as in family goes to Mass, being raised Catholic, like this is the whole family's going, so this is where I go, to realizing there is a truth. And that learning the truth is super important. And I think this is kind of a gift of like how my family would solve problems. So, for instance, if there was a difference of an opinion, it wouldn't be, oh, well, that's good for you, this is good for me. It's like, no, this is going to be hashed out, dragged out, chewed on until we get to everybody understanding the same thing because there is one truth. And so, like in my spiritual journey, just realizing the truth is real. And I don't have to be afraid of the truth. And I think that is really just such a profound, wonderful gift. So, for instance, I was taught Jesus is present here in the Eucharist. Yes, but, like, is that true? Like, it might be a thought that's out there. But really coming to know and to grasp in my heart, like, that's the truth. And realizing, like, how my life is conformed by it. And whatever is true, I don't have to protect myself from. And so the kind of working on it and realizing like my life has changed because of it. But then at a certain point, and I don't know when it started, but realizing, well, if this is true, then what does this mean? As in, well, for myself, like, okay, if Jesus is here in the Eucharist, I need to be Catholic. But then comes, well, what does it mean for the rest of the world? Like how we live and how we do things. So I think I went from being focused on truth to then wanting to work for justice. And for myself, this turned the form of, I'm going to say, political activism. Getting very opinionated, strong, like not fearing any conversation to have with anybody. Like these are the right things that you need to do, trying to sway opinions and move in a direction. And I would say this culminated my life with fighting for a right for life around a young woman. Her name is Terri Schiavo. If you're not familiar with their case, I'll tell you too on another time, or it's worth looking up. But that really had a profound impact on me because I quickly realized fighting for justice is, I'm not going to say a waste of time, but it is futile. As in, like, the world we live in, there is a brokenness and a darkness that is so much greater than us. And, like, our efforts, our strength, our ability to, like, let's go out there and fix all of these things wrong with the world around us. Like, it doesn't take long to realize these things are out there and we need to address them. But yet, how quickly we can feel overwhelmed by it and burned out by it. And then we just kind of give up. And it's just like, okay, I'm just going to take care of me. But in that shift, I came to, I would say, the state that I am now. In that there is nothing more important than holiness. And I think this is a new thing for me because the idea of holiness, I think so often, was the idea of just like moral perfection, of like doing everything right, following all the rules. and that this is like the way that I'm supposed to live. I'm just going to be able to do in myself all of these like interior resolutions of like, this is how I want to live. And realizing, even in doing that, how utterly I am a failure, right? And even like, okay, fighting the battles out there, but then just trying to fight the battles of myself, and how much we're at the mercy of just like these things stirring in our hearts that start pulling us in directions and spending time and doing things that we know like aren't good. We don't really like them. And then we're trying to fix them. And sometimes we have success, sometimes we don't. And then we like get into the season of Lent. It's like, okay, now I'm gonna really focus on it. I'm gonna really try to fix these things. And then about the second week of Lent, we realize, yeah, this isn't working very well. Like, I already forgot all the resolutions I made. And so like, what is this call to holiness? Because it's not just merely, hey, don't make any mistakes, because that ain't gonna happen. It's not gonna be, okay, make yourself holy, because how can somebody who's broken just magically fix themselves? So allow me to give you a new definition of holiness. The life of Jesus living in you. And it's a gift he's already given. It's not something you deserve. It's not something you can attain for yourself or for me. He gave it. That this is who we are. Our first reading is a book of Genesis. And God made a very profound promise to Abram, who then becomes Abraham. So our father in faith, kind of the beginning of the story, the beginning of the Bible, God shows up and makes this promise like, hey, I'm going to give you a promised land. I'm going to give you a family so big it's going to fill the land. You're going to belong to me and I'm going to belong to you. And so this relationship that the Lord is calling him into, that Abraham never gets to see it. He never gets to see the promised land. He never gets to see this great family that his family is going to grow into. But he heard this promise. God is giving it. And so he trusts it. And did you notice like how strange the last line of our reading is? The Lord said to Abraham, I'm going to make you a great nation. And then it ends with, Abraham went as the Lord directed him. He just went. Like trusting in the one who made the promise. Like God is going to do this. And so our holiness isn't our own efforts, but God is trying to give it to us. And it's not just a thing. It is his very self, the life of Christ living in us, and to make that our home. Then we have the transfiguration that we heard in our gospel. This weird event where they go up on a mountain, Jesus is just utterly changed. And in some ways we can see this as a foreshadowing of what's going to come later, the life of the resurrection. And so before we see the cross, before we see his suffering, we get to see like how the story ends. And so Jesus, who is God, takes a moment to reveal to us like this insight into who he is. Like here's his life that he's living. Because prior to this, everybody's just following this man around. He looks like a normal human being, acts like a normal human being, except these like miracles are at work. And when he speaks, it has like this different level of authority. But nobody had any awareness like there's something dramatically more at work here in this man than just like maybe a prophet or a great teacher. So this revealing this life that he is living and that this is the gift he has to give. And so the promise made to Abraham of this promised land, now we get to see like what God truly had in mind. The very life of Jesus himself. To receive that life because he's already giving it. Like just to be baptized is to already be given this gift. And so to enter into it. And I would say this is the work of Lent. Not the self-improvement program, but the receiving what God wants to give. Because how much like the world tries to take this life away from us, like how beat up we can feel, like how much we like strive for these spiritual things and then very quickly like get burnt out and just kind of go into the getting along way of living. But we have a God who's actively trying to give this to us. And what does it look like to open ourselves to receiving this gift of life he wants to give? So as an image, I would like to give you this image that Dante gave. So Dante wrote these epic poems in Italian about hell, purgatory, heaven. So I don't know about you, I had to read Dante's Inferno in high school, right? You know what I'm talking about? So purgatory. The story is this mountain. So he finally gets out of hell. Now he's at Mount Purgatory. And as you kind of climb up this mountain, you're going through these different levels, right? And so you're going from like lowly, stuck to the ground, all of this heavy weight of life holding you down, to the point of getting to the top of the mountain where you are so free and light, you literally just lift off the ground and go into the heavens. So this poem's kind of that journey. And I find this very helpful because, like, if we're thinking about our spiritual journey, this is more of like what's actually going on in this human life. Like, we flirt with hell, but more often than not, like, we're struggling to overcome these things that are like stealing away this gift of life that God is trying to give. And so Dante, in putting this mountain, it's like, here's the vices, the things that the ways of living that are like stealing our joy away. And then here's the virtue that helps us keep progressing. So I find it fascinating, the base of the mountain, the thing that is at work in every time we ever sin, is pride. As in, we choose ourselves. So there's God who is calling us, and then like, yeah, you hold on, I want to do my own thing. In whatever form it shows up in. Anytime we commit a sin, it's like, I know what I should be doing, and I'm going to do what I want. And so that fundamental act is like, here's the base of the mountain, the thing that holds everything up, is the ego at work in us. And so, okay, well, how do we overcome it? Because I know I drag this thing around with me everywhere I go. Well, then learning the virtue of humility, of like, God is God and I am not, and standing before him in our poverty. And how that gives us this wonderful gift of freedom, like pulls the rug out from any place sin is at work in our life. And just like the shift from it's all about me to it's all about God. And I am just here to receive what he wants to give. And so this kind of journey takes you to the next level, to the next level. But then I find what's utterly fascinating is at the very pinnacle, like the last thing for your heart to learn is the virtue of chastity. As in, like, lust is at work, and then chastity. And I would say in this is like a mystery of like how profound our sexuality is. Like how good it is. This gift that comes with the gift of marriage as a vocation, as a sacrament of the church. This gift of our sexuality that is this profound spiritual ability to encounter each other and to encounter our God in this wonderful deep parts of our hearts. And so like learning chastity is like this level of learning how to love in this good and holy way in every part of our being, to allow sin to have no mastery over us, but to learn how to be loved in this way. And at that point, the soul in Dante's story then is like so free, it just ascends into heaven to go through the next part of the story. And so just a topic I'd like to bring up to us as a community. Is that so often we get into Lent and we start naming kind of the areas of life that we want to work on. And I would say so often is the desire to grow in chastity is an important one. And we know that it has so much freedom and can be such a place of slavery for us. But then as a community, as a church, to be able to talk about these things, to bring them to the light. And so something we could talk about is the effect of pornography. That as a society now, the first exposure on average, on the studies that have been done for this, is your first exposure to pornography was probably the age of 8. Right? That's a horrible thought. And, you know, say, thinking of ourselves as like maybe the first time we've ever been exposed to pornography, it's like, okay, that is what was going on in our hearts and our mind, maybe the shame, the confusion that came at the time. But if we just stood back and looked, and like, there's an 8-year-old, who would expose them to this, right? Without any guidance or understanding, like how much sexual abuse in that very act it would be. And yet when we experience internally, like how much shame starts starting to pile up and start shoving this down so that we never even talk about it. And so like something harmful happened to us and then it gets pushed down deep and we just kind of carry it around with us. But to realize like as a people in this modern age and the use of technology, it's like that we've all really been harmed in this way. So then, you know, just to acknowledge like, yeah, I don't need to have shame here because that's actually not helping. That there is like something that happened to me and that I can bring it to the Lord and he desires to heal it. You know, it's just like the access to pornography that we face today. Who would have thought like, hey, I'm going to church this morning. Let me take pornography with me. I hope nobody did. Okay. But how many walked in here with a smartphone, right? It's like how much access we have. I have full access to the internet right here, me as a priest. And like here we are celebrating the Mass. Like how easily it is to enter into our lives. And so that the battle we're having to fight is not like previous generations. So in a sense, it's like, let's cut ourselves a break and realize like this is a weight to carry. But then comes at the age of 12, it is not that uncommon to have an addiction to pornography. As in just like just waking up to the puberty, like a preteen, to already be a slave in this area. And then just like how much beating ourselves up that we can have of carrying this around. And then what do I do about it? And can I even bring this to the light? And so like so often we get into a cycle of like, I want to get freedom here. And then I get stuck and I get sabotaged. So often and very powerful is step one, bringing it to the light. And this can be done in several ways. One is sacrament of confession, of just bringing it to that wonderful gift of God giving the gift of mercy. And I've seen it many times, is like that very act frees some people, but not everybody. But just that one act of like, maybe I can bring it to the priest in confession, bring it to a close friend, bring it to my parents, and finally fighting through that shame. And just that very act and that flood of light can bring so much healing in of itself. And then there is, okay, now this is going to be a journey of kind of working through this. So then what would come next? A support system, right? Of kind of being smart, learning about how this affects me, some practical limitations to kind of protect myself from exposure and my times of weakness, things like that. And so for that reason, on our website, we have a page dedicated to just like resources that if you're looking for something like here's places I can go. And just a very active education. This is like a reordering our mind so we start seeing things in a different light. That itself can be very helpful. Having a place where I can talk about like my desires for intimacy and my struggles, like having a close group of friends where like you can have those real necessary conversations. Learning how to bring it to my prayer, to talk to the Lord when I sit down to pray about it. How to learn how to receive on this deep part of my heart that's longing for intimacy. Fighting the thing that tells me that I'm alone or that I'm different or I'm a special kind of broken or something like that. All these different avenues that the Lord can use for our healing. And so to know like this is a place that we get attacked. You know, in a sense, it's an epidemic that we've been facing, has been here long before the coronavirus showed up and affects a lot more people, that this is a place that the Lord desires your freedom, that he desires to give you his love, that he didn't make us with these longings in our hearts to just be frustrated or to seek some artificial means of temporary appeasement, but that his gift of love, his life in this area of my life is possible. And so that freedom is possible. And I would say another very helpful thing is keep the steps manageable. So if it's a daily addiction, the goal is a day. If it's a weekly, well, then it's a week plus one day. If it's a month, it's a month plus one day. And not to make it like, how am I going to do this for the rest of my life? Because then we get sabotaged before we even start. But there is a little bit of science I'd like to share with you, is that when we get into patterns of behaviors, and I'd also like to say this applies to any area of sin. So if this isn't an area of struggle for you, this applies to anything. But to develop a new pattern, a new way of living, we're developing a new neural pathway. which takes, say, 4 to 6 weeks, right? And so if I can do something for 4 to 6 weeks, a way of living, then in fact, like, I have everything I need to be able to do it for the rest of my life. And so the goal is to make it, you know, to that far. And it's just like, okay, every cycle and all the rhythms of my body, I made it through all of those struggles, and I have what I need to be successful. That doesn't mean the evil one's not going to attack you later and temptations will come, but that we can have the confidence of like, no, I can face these things, and I know what that freedom and that victory tastes like, and to claim that. Coincidentally, you know, as long as it takes to build these neural pathways, it's just about the length of the season of Lent. You know, it's like in the wisdom of the church of just like, hey, if we're desiring to live this life of Christ, this entering into these efforts of prayer, fasting, almsgiving, like here we start developing just a new normal. And it's one that brings us a little closer to our life of Christ. So there's our work, our entering into the life of Christ, but it's an act of receptivity. Now we have a God who already gave the gift, who's already laboring to give us the fullness of his life, that he is doing the work. And so the simplicity and the humility of just bringing those deep parts of our hearts, wherever it is, whatever we need, to be open before him, to let him receive, for us to receive whatever he desires to give, that he will do it, that he is here at this very moment fighting for your freedom, fighting to give you a greater life than you have ever known up to this point. This is who he is. And can we set out on that journey, trusting in his promise and his love?